that they had lived there, they told me, in that house there. And they pointed it out with an apprehension that could easily have been mistaken for respect or fear. Their fingers barely peeked out from the cuffs of their heavy black coats. The smell of ash under their arms, dirty nails, dry lips. Their eyes, having discreetly moved toward where they were pointing, quickly returned to their original position, gazing straight ahead. "What are you really looking for?" they asked, without daring to say so. And I, who didn't exactly know, followed their steps like a shadow, back to the village over snow-covered trails. It wasn't really a house, I should say first. I would have described what I saw on that morning at the beginning of autumn as a shack, maybe not even, a hovel. In any case, it was a habitable structure made from wood, cardboard, and lots of dry branches. It did have a roof, a ridged roof, and a pair of windows covered in thick, transparent plastic instead of glass. It had the air of a last refuge. It gave the impression that beyond was only open space and the law of the wilderness and the sky, so blue, so high, above the wild. I remember the cold. Above all, I remember the cold. I remember my clenched jaw, fists deep in my coat pockets. Well, that's from the opening of The Taiga Syndrome by Cristina Rivera Garza. It's a moody, atmospheric mystery novel that follows tradition by opening with the narrator telling us that setting where she's meeting her client, even though our client is not exactly transparent. The story is set in a border town near an ocean, but on which continent this takes place is never really made clear, which of course adds to the surreal sense of the story and its characters. We do learn that the story is told about the narrator's journey into the deep, dense forest, the mysterious taiga, of the frozen north, a landscape that seems endless in its pine-treed vista, stretching on and on without the relief of human-made roads, towns, highway signs. And yet, too, this is a story about cities, those places of dense human habitation, where our narrator reminds us we cannot bear to live too long. Not unlike the narrator's feelings about the taiga, we were told much earlier, we cannot bear to live for too long either. And so this is a book about the people our detective and her translator meet along the way, the lumberjacks, the prostitutes in the small town they encounter, the feral boy whose backstory she learns a bit about over the course of a couple of days in the forest, the little boy who peers through a cottage's small window and watches spellbound as a couple in the deep forest experiences the woman's miscarriage. All of those human characters, these forest-dwelling few, fascinate her and fascinate us, her readers, too. It's a book about human sexuality and human desire, human wonderings about the world and the oddities we find in life, and human questions that encompass the wild of nature, for we meet characters in the guise of a wolf, and as I'm sure you've noticed, the endless trees, the forest itself. And so today's book is perhaps best described as a modern-day fairy tale, and the story's connection with fairy tales of yesteryear is made clear, as they were so often set in the deep wood. Think of Little Red Riding Hood. Think of Hansel. Gretel. Think, if you will, of this particular section from chapter 12, An Underwhelming Face. That we asked about them in every campsite we passed in the forest, I would write in the report that by now seemed more like an intimate diary than the kind of text that was meant to gather and provide precise and objective information. A summary of everything, the ultimate proof. That in all of the campsites, there was always someone who had seen or even heard of this mad couple of the taiga, followed closely by a medium-sized wolf and something else that wasn't human, hanging from the treetops. It was impossible not to sense that with great difficulty, little by little, we were getting closer to our ultimate goal, to find her, talk to her, bring her back. It was impossible for us not to feel overcome by optimism. It wouldn't be the first time, after all, or the last. I would write that too, for the pure joy of it, for the optimism of it all. We were getting close, that was clear, how difficult to walk when you have to pull your feet out of the mud. How difficult even to breathe, to keep breathing, inhale, exhale. The last people we asked were a group of three moving through the forest in black overalls and gas masks over their faces. It was the translator who hurried to catch them once we'd spotted them off in the distance. Three figures at the end of the earth, their heads filled with clouds. Three survivors of a war yet to come. When they pointed their long metal canes at the makeshift tent, the tent which, though we did not yet know it, was our destination, we approached without fear. There was a small light inside, a candle maybe, or a kerosene lantern. Perhaps body heat, conversation, an army marching behind a white flag is what we were. It is difficult to describe what can't be imagined. The plot is almost ethereal. We're told in the first pages that our narrator has been hired to search for a woman who has run off with a man, the folks they were chasing after in that passage we just read. Together, the man and the woman disappeared into the forest, our narrator was told. The detective's client never clearly tells why they want to know of the fate of the woman and the man with whom she ran off, other than that the woman was his wife, and a telegram he received led him to believe she now wants to be found. So one can surmise that the question to be solved revolves around a marriage in crisis, and what better natural landscape for that crisis to play out than an endless forest? As another reviewer wrote about the novel's atmospherics, quote, the title makes reference to a condition in which someone wants to leave a place but is unable to do so. The book's taiga, an inhospitable geography that swallows all visible space, is a site of melancholy and haunting obsession, end quote. This book is beautifully translated, something I've always impressed with when I read foreign language literature. Kudos to Suzanne Jill Levine and to Aviva Khanna for translating this in flowing English while keeping the story's surreal sense of place and characters intact. A bit of research will let you know that the author, Cristina Rivera Garza, is a well-respected contemporary Mexican writer whose work often reflects the avant-garde of modern-day literature. And for me, indeed, the Taiga Syndrome reflected memories from the works of folks like Franz Kafka and Luis Borges. Although short in length, this book is more of a novella than a full-length novel. The story it presents to us is a page-turner that leaves us satisfied as a read, even as it leaves us with more questions than answers. Questions about the motivations of the man and the woman our narrator detective sets out to discover. Questions about the client and his actual, not stated, motivations for wanting to find the man and the woman. And questions about the detective herself, who offers us just enough information, a little bit of her backstory, a little bit of her motivations to take up detecting once again, certainly her perseverance through the endless forest to track down a quarry, to enthrall us in the first pages and keep us moving forward as the story is told, however surreal, no matter how fantastical the story may seem to get. Perhaps, like me, you'll be intrigued by the surrealist cover art, Dark Sun, composed by Swedish artist Christine Odland, and surprised and intrigued to see the book has been read and commented upon by a wide variety of review sites, everything from Kirkus Review to the science fiction fantasy world of Tor. In the end, it's a book that is, as I said, it's hard to put down, it's hard to understand, but it's also, at the same time, hard to put down once you get started into its enthralling story. I want to finish by reading just a bit more about that forest and about our author's impressions about that forest and about her impression of this translator who seems to be following her along, helping her make her way through this forest. Another question. The narrator, the detective, doesn't know this forest, doesn't know the people in the forest because she evidently doesn't speak their language, or at least she needs a translator to interpret the forest and the people and what they see to her. So here she is. We're pretty far into the story now, but at this time, she's going to describe what it's like to be in that deep, dense forest, seeking for these two mysterious people, this woman and the man who she's been told at the very beginning had run away from the man who was seeking them. Why they ran? She's not quite sure. That she is going to find them, she is determined. And here's what she writes. That on this morning of the fourth day, we set out very early. That I wouldn't bother to give him poetic descriptions of the beauty surrounding us, the flora, the fauna, the noises, the apparitions, the senses. It was enough to say that it was daunting and very difficult to keep moving ahead. He could easily understand this, I would write in the report that, despite my intentions, filled page after page of a small notebook with a black cover. The Tega syndrome. As for the translator, I would quickly and bluntly assure him that the translator stayed on, as I did, for the promise of more money. But what is money even worth in the middle of a boreal forest? A mere hallucination, I said to myself, and to the tree that watched me leave. We stopped several times. We drank hot water from the thermos and devoured, when necessary, the boiled potatoes the translator had had the foresight to pack. The forest bounty. Its rhythm. It is difficult to transform garbage into a trail of crumbs. We stopped to examine a strange artifact peeking out from the ground, alerting us to something else inexplicable. A plane's instrument panel, full of buttons and levers that someone at some point must have lost control of. Heavily rusted. When I looked behind us, the world seemed incomprehensible and eternal. Time. It is difficult to imagine what can't be described. The forest for others is less uniform and less forest than it felt to me. Judging by the paths we were crossing, the development of the timber industry had brought lumberjacks and businessmen alike. The needs of the lumberjacks had in turn brought cooks and merchants, usury and sex, in small rural houses, around fires burned down to embers, by heavy rust-covered machinery, men and women of different ages, covered by the same thermal coats, stretched and rested their muscles. From a distance, they looked like small nomadic tribes. Off they went, carrying only what they needed for daily survival, tethered by ropes to a world that, though far from the forest, still tugged at them forcefully. It is not a good life, the translator volunteered without my asking. Too many drugs needed to keep up the work pace, he said, cutting off a piece of onion and bringing it to his mouth with the help of his pocket knife. Too much, what is the word, anxiety. Yes, too much anxiety. I remained quiet, so he would go on. I did it for several years before I went to college, he continued. The pay is good, sometimes. It covered expenses. He stopped to spit. Then he looked toward the foliage and didn't say anything else for a while. It's impossible to live in those places for very long, he added, referring to cities. Too many people, too much noise. I remember his lips, their settled movement. Above all, I remembered the way they opened and closed, as if in slow motion, as if every word took years to form in some warm red region of his organs, only to emerge at full speed, luscious, shaking itself off. I remember his cheeks, flaming red. Gives you an idea of the sort of story, the sort of novel, the sort of writing this is. It's really memorable writing, and as I said, it's a story that I think you'll remember, certainly the characters, for a long time after the last time you close and read that last page. The Tega Syndrome, Cristina Rivera Garza, quite an interesting read, and you'll find it at many of our fine local public libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.